WCCW.
Extreme Canadian Championship Wrestling. Now on Turnbuckle Time. Keeping you up to date on all the turns, pushes, and storylines.
Hey, now it's Turnbuckle Time. We just recapped the return to Poco, and joining me once again on the line is Shane Locker, and my usual co-host. He's ready to recap Who's the Man at the RCC. We missed that one July 16th. Shane-o, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. It seems like we got a lot to cover here, so let's just get right into it.
You're right, Shane. We do have a lot to cover here, so we will get in right into it. Who's the Man, July 16th at the RCC. I was in Chicago. Shane up at his place in Vernon. And we got it started with a... I liked it. It was a good high-energy opener. Alex Plexus defeating Harv Sira, getting the victory, despite Gurv Sira being at ringside. This was a very quick opener. It was about 5 minutes long. Good energy. The crowd really behind it. Of course, the girls love the sexy Plexi. And, of course, Harv, one of the better heels in this promotion, doing his stuff, getting people to hate him. Fantastic work. Gurv jumping in a few times, but in the end, Jason Sullivan comes in, intervenes, gets rid of Gurv, and Plexus gets the victory. But it doesn't end there. Plexus and Sullivan then proceed to challenge the Bollywood Lions to an impromptu tag match, which IBC, at the behest of the crowd who really seemed to want it, came out, makes the match official. It gets underway. Now, I just finished saying that the opening match was good. It was 5 minutes. It was quick action. It was back and forth. It was the way an opening match should be. High energy. Get the crowd into it. But once it turned into that tag match, it started to kind of slow. The match dragged for over 10 minutes. I mean, Plexus and Sullivan do get the victory in the end with a pin. But for me, kind of dragged, kind of killed the energy of the original match. And a little twist at the end. These boys thought they had won the tag belts, Plexus and Sullivan. They're jumping around, celebrating. And in the background... Michael Sweetster announcing that, in fact, it was a non-title match. And the Bollywood Lions, they get their belts back. They're rejoicing, getting in the crowd's faces and stuff like that. A little twist at the end, but for me, it didn't really save the match. Now, something I really wanted to touch on, Shane, I know you have a take on this too, is the fact that Jason Sullivan seems to be in every single angle in every single storyline. He's almost like the utility man for the faces. When you need help, you're getting beaten up by some heels, Jason Sullivan will come out and bail you out. What are your thoughts on him just kind of, I don't want to say sticking his nose in everyone's business, but sticking his nose in everyone's business?
Yeah, for sure. He's totally been the utility man. Whenever you need a big guy in your faction, or if you're going in alone against a group of bad guys, Jason Sullivan, he's always the backup. He's always called in. And I think it was fun for a while to see where he would end up, if he'd end up with one faction over another. But he's just been going back and forth.
You're right, Shane. He has been going back and forth, kind of no real alliance. He's taken on the administration. He's taken on the selection. He's taken on the Lions. He just seems to be taking on everybody. And I didn't mind Jason Sullivan when he had a little bit of direction, but when you just kind of throw him in to fill in gaps, it's like, it's kind of wearing on me a little. Not wearing on me, but I don't want to say I'm getting sick of Jason Sullivan, but it's kind of hard to find any continuity with him.
I'm surprised they haven't faced Moondog Manson up against Jason Sullivan. We've been saying on the last few Turnbuckle Times that hardcore division, not a lot of guys to compete against Moondog Manson. The styles just don't match. But a guy like Jason Sullivan, a big guy, I think he can have that kind of a hardcore streak. He definitely has that crazy look in his eyes. I think give these guys two or three matches, they could put on a nice little program.
So that's how it ended. Plexus defeating Harv, the impromptu tag match, which Sullivan and Plexus thought they had won the tag straps, but in the end, the Bollywood Lions get bailed out, really, by Michael Sweetster, because that could have very well been a title match.
Did you see the piece on the Bollywood Lions that the Global News did?
I did not. That's about 2 weeks old now, I think. But tell us, for the listeners who didn't get a chance to see it, what it was all about.
I was basically just talking typical Bollywood Lion stuff. The bad guys that you love to hate. And they gave their little spiel about working across the country, you know, eating the tuna, sleeping on the gym floors, you know, typical Lion stuff. And it was a very enjoyable piece. I think it was actually taken probably a couple months back at TLC, because I could see some of the Evolution banners there. I could see our Azeem the Queen signs. So if you're a ECCW fan, nothing new, but it's just cool to see the Lions getting a little local media coverage.
And if anybody deserves it in the ECCW, it's probably them. We've been calling them the top tag team, perhaps even the top heels for the last little while now, and it's good to see them getting some coverage. And
I think the ECCW crowd actually came across very well on the piece that the Global News did. It seemed like it was a packed house in there for TLC. If I didn't know what ECCW was and I was just watching that on the news, I'd say, goddamn, I got to get down to one of these events. It just came across very well on TV.
Well, that's good. If you're saying that, that it's coming across that well, and TLC was a pretty big event. I mean, if there was an event besides maybe Halloween Hell to be at, that was the one. I mean, it was a pretty sick event, if I do say so myself. And another thing to add on the Bollywood Lions as we give them some FaceTime, they're on Twitter now, believe it or not. Most of the wrestlers are on Twitter. I will give you their handle later on in our news and notes section as we handled all that social media garb later on. Moving on, Danny Deeds with the German Druid, as we call him, Rigger Von Slasher. He took on Azul Angel from out of territory. Very quick match. I mean, Danny Deeds coming off a few really embarrassing results as of late, and I'm hoping the ECCW managed to restore some credit, as he did defeat Azul Angel. Did get some help from Rigger, but in the end, Danny Deeds does get the victory. Moving on also to another out-of-territory man who managed to come down and put in some work for the ECCW, Mike Santiago, who I believe we saw at one of our two first cards that we took in at ECCW. He pops in every now and then. He was defeated by Jamie Diaz, who, I say it every show, he's looking better and better. He's looking better and better. He's really come a long way since we first started seeing that skinny Jamie Diaz kind of green when we first started coming to see ECCW. He polishes off Mike Santiago with the scissor kick, and a little asterisk beside that scissor kick, I will put, his last five victories, Shane, have all been achieved by that scissor kick. So they're letting Diaz put over his finishing move and win cleanly in the ring, which is good to see for a young guy like him.
So do they have a name for this big scissor kick move? It's got to have a cool name.
Well, I'm going to leave that up to Diaz. He has new T-shirts out, if you haven't seen. I think I saw Mama Diaz rocking one. The 50-50 girls were rocking them. I'm pretty sure Diaz came out with one again. It's black with a white logo of his big head, his face. So if you're a chick and you like Diaz, that's the shirt to go and get. But, Shane, a little something me and you wanted to touch on outside of Jamie Diaz and his new T-shirts and how good he's looking is just some of the talent coming into the ECCW from these other territories, mostly in places like Tacoma or Portland. We're talking about guys like Mike Santiago, Azul Angel, Jason Sullivan, Aaron Bolo, guys like that.
Scott Lee Crew.
Even Scott Lee Crew. I think he's from Calgary, if I'm not mistaken, or somewhere here in Canada. What do you think it's like for guys like that to not come into unknown territory, but to come into a promotion where fans might not know your face, and you kind of have to really work hard to push your character, and sometimes you don't get that many opportunities, sometimes one match a month, if that, you know?
Well, yeah, I follow some of the wrestlers on Twitter, and some of these out-of-town guys, I like to check their Facebooks and their Twitters, and a lot of times you'll see after an ECCW event, these guys are very grateful just to be on a card in Vancouver with ECCW. I think they know that it's a solid promotion, it's a good business, and they're always playing in front of packed houses. So I think these out-of-territory guys really, really love performing in ECCW. If you go on YouTube and look up some matches from Aaron Bolo down in Seattle, down in Portland, some of the venues they're playing in, they look like they're wrestling inside like a Chili's restaurant. So I think they appreciate like the dedicated venues and the dedicated fans when they come up to Vancouver.
Now we definitely have our favorites of guys we like that are coming up. Azul Angel's really starting to grow on us. I really liked Mike Santiago's work with Jamie Diaz. He is also the DOA Pure Champion down there. On the flip side, what do you think it's like when ECCW guys go across the border and perform in those venues? Because we know guys like Bishop, The Natch, Baroni, Scotty Mack, Nicole Matthews even. A lot of these superstars do dip across the line for some action. What do you think it's like on the flip side? What do you think these Americans think of these Canadian wrestlers coming across the border and putting in work there? How do you think our characters get over?
That's an interesting question. I think you would have to go to one of these shows south of the border to see how the fans interact. I don't know if they have as dedicated a fan base in the Indies south of the border. So either way, the fans just could just be going just to see some guys wrestle. They might not be going necessarily to follow the storylines. I really don't know. I'd have to take in one of those events. I'm kind of wondering if the ECCW guys, the Canadian guys, are automatically a bad guy when they go down in the States just because they're Canadian.
Well, that's interesting you brought that up, and I was just going to bring it up. But if you do watch some stuff on YouTube or even on the websites, Tony Baroni, when he dips across the line to put in some work, whether it's at DOA or TCW, he uses a different gimmick. He's Mr. Canada. He comes out wearing a Canadian shirt, wearing a Canadian flag. And I talked to him one time about it, and I said, Tony, you know, when I see you wrestling in ECCW, you're the Guido Athlito. You got the chin strap. You got your shirt on. You do your Baroni thing. But then I was watching the video, and I see him coming up in all-Canadian gear, and I said, Tony, why do you do that? And he says, you know what, man, it's easy heat. So I guess you're probably right with that, Shane, that if you're Canadian and you let it be known when you cross that border, they're probably going to boo you.
And it seems like a good place to maybe test out, you know, how comics go on the road and they play these small clubs and they test out new material. Maybe going down in the States, doing a few matches with a different promotion, these guys can go test out new gimmicks, new matches, and maybe if a new gimmick catches on south of the border, they said, hey, I'm bringing that back, and we're going to use that in ECCW. So maybe a good place for these guys to try to build on their careers.
Yeah, a little bit of experimentation, that's right. Moving on from the out-of-towners, we go to a pretty big match as far as title implications are concerned. Bishop, the Prophet, Artemis Spencer, and Ravenous Randy in an elimination fatal four-way for a number one contender's spot at Tony Baroni's ECCW title. Now, before the match, Natch and Bishop take in the mic, and I know you, Shane, you kind of touch on the fact that they should be doing more to put this program and this feud over, the Sid Salem return versus the Selection. Well, Natch and Bishop took this opportunity, took to the mic, Bishop pretty much saying, you know what, before I even made it into the Selection, I was better than Sid, and it was just a matter of time before I took his place. What do you think about that, Bishop and the Natch letting their intentions be known for Sid Salem before this match?
I like them building on this storyline. I do see that Sid Salem fights Stallion Smith later on in this card, which I don't really understand, seeing that he did just fight Stallion Smith a while back. It would be nice to see him going up against a different member of the Natural Selection. But, you know, Sid Salem's coming back from a big injury. I think they can work this promo for a while, and I think they're going to ease into it, maybe take their time and have a big main event between Salem and Bishop, hopefully, I would say maybe a month or two down the line.
We get into the match. Of course, it's elimination, but it isn't a brawl. It isn't a bedlam. It is tag. So two members start in the ring, and the two others can tag themselves in, really, if they get the opportunity, or can be tagged out. Artie and Randy taking the time. They were the two faces in this match. They took the time to work some comedic spots against the heels of the match, forcing them to tag in and out, and just kind of doing like a Benny Hill spot, having everybody running around the ring trying to tag each other. I thought it was nice. When you have Randy and even the Prophet in the ring, you just have to work some comedic gimmicks into the match because it's just part of their character. And while they are great technicians in the ring, it just helps to put their character forward that much more. Prophet, we mentioned him. He's that comedic wrestler. He is a good ring technician, but he isn't one of those guys that when you see him on the card, you're like, yep, Prophet's going all the way. He's going to take the belt. Da 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 da. End of story. Prophet is the first to be eliminated. He's doing his thing. He's in Artie's face. He's mocking him. Artie manages to just pretty much pull in Prophet, just like a Venus flytrap. Slaps on the artichoke, making Prophet tap or repent. Let's not forget he beat Prophet in the I Repent match with that move. And the match moves on. Next to be eliminated, Ravenous Randy, who I will note, Shane, was not rocking the hawk. He actually had his hair in somewhat of a ponytail. He wasn't rocking the hawk.
Are you sure it was Ravenous Randy? Because I remember we did a promo with Ravenous Randy way back in the day, one of the first turnbuckle times, and I'm pretty sure he said he always, always rocks the hawk, bagawk, something like that.
He definitely said bagawk, and he always says he rocks the hawk, but he wasn't rocking the hawk. Maybe the makeup crew at ECCW slipped up and forgot his hair gel and his egg whites.
Maybe a lice breakout at the RCC or something. Is it shaved? Is it sloppy? What's going on?
He still had it. He still had the hair, but it wasn't put up into a hawk. He kind of just let it flop onto his head. You know what I mean?
Mm. Maybe Volt Vegas in the back somewhere stole all of Ravenous Randy's pomade before the match.
Seems like something Volt Vegas would do, right?
I think so.
Steal your pomade or, like, steal your chair and be like, no, man, I was sitting here the whole time.
Steal your 24-pack of Pepsi Cola? Seems like a slimy move he would do.
Okay, enough about that. So the last two guys we have are Artie and Bishop. Artie, we recognize him as one of the finest wrestlers. We gave him hell for not showing up to the last Surrey show. Little did we know he was injured. But he worked the majority of this match, and that had to wear on him, and it did. He was made short work of by Bishop, who ends up winning the match and scoring a shot at the ECCW Championship. Now, I have to ask you, Shane, where do you see this going? If he meets Barone, we could see a repeat of their program that culminated at TLC. Now, I wouldn't be opposed to that, because I particularly love the way Bishop and Barone work with each other. I don't know what it is. They always have good, clean, executed matches, always great finishes. Both these guys give their guts every match, whether it's the biggest card of the year or maybe the smallest crowd of the year. They don't care. They'll give it all, and I wouldn't mind seeing that program. But on the flip side, what happens if we see Pete Powers win the ECCW Championship at the upcoming event and he takes on Bishop? What do you think is going to benefit this promotion to see? Another repeat of Barone, who might even be... Would that rivalry be stale at this point? Or would you rather see Bishop fight his compadre in the Selection, Pete Powers?
Well, I always thought in the Selection, since they brought in Pete Powers, that there would be some sort of infighting within the Selection that... You know what? Bishop would want to be the big guy. He'd want to be the powerhouse. Pete Powers is like, you know what? I'm ripped. I'm big. I'm the big guy. I thought they would have a feud, you know, go one-on-one to find out who is the top guy in the Natural Selection. And I think now that you have Bishop with the number one contender shot, maybe you give the belt to Pete Powers. You know, that causes a little bit of feud. And then whoever wins gets to stay in the Selection, gets to be champ, and the loser packs their bags and they leave. So that's where I would like to see this this program go. But first, we got to see Pete Powers. I think it would be an upset if he beat Tony Barone in the bull rope match.
Well, something tells me that they'd probably be leaning, even though it might even be stale at this point, that they might lean towards a Barone Bishop feud again, or even if it's just a one-off, because I don't know how big of a draw Bishop and Powers would be. We know Powers wasn't over as a face. It wasn't working for him, but he's found a new niche that's working for him, this kind of bully of a heel in Natural Selection. But Bishop is very similar. He's a bully, and he's a heel. I don't know how exciting that would be for the fans to watch two guys you hate fight for the biggest prize in the game. So something tells me, unless something drastic happens between when Bishop gets his shot and whoever wins at Bull Rope, I think we might be seeing Barone and Bishop again.
Yeah, it could be a little bit early, too. Powers is still pretty, he's pretty new when it comes to being a heel. It might be a little bit early to put the strap on him. But I do think that Bishop and Powers will eventually do some sort of program together in the future, and I think that will cause the collapse of the Natural Selection.
Well, that's a bold prediction. We move on in this feud. We talked about it earlier. Sid Salem taking on Stallion Smith. Salem took on Smith back in Surrey at the last Surrey show. The match was thrown out due to the Selection surrounding the ringside. However, this time, the Selection has been banned from ringside. They are not allowed. So we're going to see the exact same match we saw in Surrey, but maybe without all the crap. We'll just get to see a good tech match. But despite being banned from ringside, you had to know the Selection was going to be involved somehow. Whether it was throwing baby powder in the eyes of Bill Taylor to get a cheap shot or what have you, the Selection managed to jump Sid Salem before the match. The Natch up on the by the commentary table, distracting Sid Salem, only for Pete Powers to jump in to the ring from the crowd and slug Salem and start off the match with Stallion Smith laying the Daytons to Sid Salem.
What the hell are the Daytons? I've never heard that one before.
They're a type of boot.
Oh, getting pretty clever with that.
Look it up. Cute. Look it up, kiddo. So, the Natural, working the commentary table during the match, no doubt having his eyes on his former boy, Sid Salem. Stallion Smith, working over Sid for most of this match. Me and you find that a little bit weird to see. Sid used to be the guy who controlled the matches. He used to be the heel. He used to be the guy wearing down the face until the improbable comeback, so to speak. Not like this anymore. Sid's the guy being worn down by Stallion Smith. And one thing I noticed about Stallion, and sometimes a lot of people don't notice it, because Stallion doesn't really have much of a character. He's kind of just, he's the junior member of the Selection. He kind of just keeps his mouth shut and does what he's told. But Stallion is a fantastic in-ring worker. And some of his execution, especially with a big guy like Salem, like this... This isn't exactly a size match. This is a size mismatch, and you couldn't tell because Stallion Smith was flowing and moving and executing so well with Sid, and I thought it was fantastic in-ring work from the young Stallion Smith.
So Stallion Smith's looking good. Him and Sid, this is their second match together, so maybe a little bit of in-ring chemistry going on here. But how does this one end? Is it Sid Salem getting the victory over the junior member of the selection?
Sid Salem does, in fact, get the victory over the junior member of the selection, finishing with a brainbuster, not his usual trademark tombstone, which actually Bishop used to finish off Artemis Spencer in the Fatal 4-Way, I forgot to mention, as a little bit of a taunt towards
maybe
Sid.
Maybe a little bit of an FU to Sid Salem.
Yeah, so Salem hits
the message.
Salem hits the brainbuster on Stallion for the win. Now, another thing I want to talk about this program with Salem and the selection. Ever since Salem's return, they haven't done much to really make him look like a big threatening return. Really, he got put through the mat on his debut return. The next time he was surrounded by the natural selection, we didn't get to see a clean finish to the match, and it wasn't like he was kicking ass in the match anyways. The next show in Abbotsford, he gets his ass kicked by the Creamator and has to resort to hitting Creamy with a cane to get the victory, distracted by the ref. And this time, sure, he did get the victory cleanly over Stallion Smith in the natural selection, but it wasn't like he was cleaning house or anything. So I'm a little underwhelmed by how they're building up Salem. I think they need to really like establish him that he can kick ass. He can clean house with the selection. Whether he does in the final say in the blow off of this feud or not, they need to establish him as a guy who can handle the selection. Because right now it looks like, you know, he's had to be bailed out by Sullivan. He's needed a cane and the ref's back turned. I think they need to do more to not make Salem look like the patsy to the selection.
And they're also kind of sweeping a few things underneath the rug. The fact that Sid Salem, before his injury, at one point he was a double champion in ECCW. He lost, I believe it was the NWA championship, to Scotty Mack in what turned out to be a screw job with the administration of Michael Sweetster with the fast count. And then with the ECCW championship, he never lost that championship. Because of the injury, he had to forfeit the belt. So if you think about it, he should still be the champion. He should still be the undisputed champion. He never lost a match clean. And you think he would come back and he would want to avenge that. But that really hasn't been talked about. Salem hasn't said anything about it. And I think that's somewhere else where they could build on Salem's return. You know, he's out for revenge. He wants his property and what is rightfully his.
I definitely agree. They need to. Sid was a main event talent, and they need to reestablish him like that. None of this having him bailed out by Sullivan or getting cheap victories. They really need to establish him that he can be a shit kicker and he can take on the selection and he can vie for the belt. Because right now, if I'm a new ECCW fan coming into the promotion right now, Sid Salem looks pretty weak. No?
I think he does, and I think with the program they're doing now, as a fan, I would love to see him go up against Azeem the Dream. We know that Salem and Azeem, I don't know, just something about it, it seemed like they were the closest in the natural selection. We had Sid Salem on after his surgery, and he was talking about the selection, and nobody had contacted him. The only person who had tried was Azeem the Dream, and he had sent him a text message. And then Azeem thought we were talking shit about him, and you know that he thought we were trying to drive a wedge between him and Salem. So that history is there. I would love to hear Azeem's take on Salem coming back and Salem kind of going against the natural selection. And I think if you could put Salem in there, have him squash Azeem, make him look like a threat again, I think that would really put Salem over as a face and give him a good push in the right direction.
I think you're totally right, because if there's anybody who the fans really truly hate in the selection, besides, of course, The Natural, who is pretty much the most hated guy ever, it's Azeem. Fans don't like him. So I agree with that, and that's a good shout, and we'll have to see what they do with this program. I mean, we're saying we should be patient and let it build, but keep in mind, Sid's been back here for a month, and I'm not exactly overwhelmed with what they've done with him so far. We move on. Nicole Matthews taking on Taya Valkyrie. Woo! Let's get dirty right here. Nicole Matthews comes out to the RCC, recently broken up from Ray, and I don't know about you, but I will say this now. Nicole Matthews just doesn't seem like Nicole Matthews when she was with Ray. She wasn't her mean self. She wasn't her vocal self. It seemed like every time she was just waiting for Ray to blow smoke up her ass, and it just seemed weird. It's nice to see Nicole Matthews to return to the persona that we're so used to, the vicious heel Nicole Matthews, and she comes out and she cuts one of the most vicious promos I've seen any wrestler, male or female, cut in a long time. She tears down Casey Spinelli personally, tears down the camera girls for not earning their way in the ECCW, making fun of them for being merch girls, and then she then proclaims the Supergirls title is no longer the Supergirls title, it's the ECCW Women's Wrestling Championship. And I'm not going to repeat the phrase exactly, but Nicole Matthews calling out another female wrestler from the Pacific Northwest with some very, very nasty comments. And I did manage to get a shoot interview with Nicole Matthews back in February, I believe. And I haven't released it yet, but she made the exact same comments to me about this female wrestler. And she went on mic and said it in front of a couple hundred fans. And we're talking about work shoots. They're all the rage in the business right now. But this was probably one of the nastiest promos I think I've seen anybody cut ever.
You got to wonder where the inspiration for this shoot comes from. All of a sudden, she's attacking out-of-territory workers.
I know exactly who the comments were made about, and I'm sure most of the boys and the gals back in the locker room of ECCW and as well as these other promotions know exactly who she's talking about. So the fact that she went out there and tongue-in-cheek said it was just unbelievable. Like, people, I'm sure the fans, unless you're a hardcore mark, don't know who she's talking about, but the fact that she said it was just, it was crazy. I mean, whoo, it's on YouTube. It's got a couple hundred hits already. And if you haven't seen it, Shane, I suggest you go take a look, because if you like promos and you like shooting, well, Nicole Matthews, she just did something special.
It seems strange, too. It's almost like she's burying the women's division, saying that it's no good. And if this is a shoot, it seems like she's saying, you know what, there's no competition, Casey Spinelli, what kind of competition is that? And it almost just seems like she's fed up, and she seems like a competitor. Like, she wants to fight, she wants to wrestle. So maybe just a lot of frustration coming out of Nicole Matthews because of the lack of, I don't want to say lack of talent, but just, you know, not enough competitors in the Supergirls division right now.
No, I agree, and I think that's pretty much where it stems for, whether she's truly meaning what she said about KC or not. There is a lack of competition in the women's division. Not Supergirls, the women's division. There is a lack of competition. They don't have the numbers they'd like. Nicole obviously putting in time in Shimmer across the border and stuff like that. Really hitting out hard and pretty much saying, I am the women's division here. And you know what? She's kind of right. So It's some probably view her as a self-centered bitch. Some probably view her as one of the better women's wrestlers that we've seen lately. Take it however you like. It was quite a provocative promo. And she's cut off by Taya Valkyrie, who comes out. And I will say this, Taya Valkyrie looking much better than she did even a month ago back in Surrey when she was in the triple threat match with Veronica and Casey. She just looked more organized in her moves. It looked like she wasn't trying to do too much at once. Really kind of, her wrestling made sense, if that makes sense. She her moves and everything were just more crisply executed. And I thought a great improvement from Taya Valkyrie. Still got to do something about that gear, but we'll work on that one thing at a time. Nicole ends up getting the victory with the roll of the dice, reversing a vertical suplex on Taya and retaining the women's championship. What do you think about that, Shano?
I think it's interesting. Whenever Nicole Matthews is on a card or appearing in ECCW news anywhere, that you're able to talk about it for about 25 minutes straight and I don't get a word in. You're just smitten with Nicole Matthews, aren't you? You would have 20 minutes of material to go on about.
Hey, are you done your thing? Can I have my bit now?
No, I'm just smiling. I'm enjoying it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, in an era, and you can back me up on this, and I'm sure every other guy can back me up on this, where women's wrestling generally sucks, and that's the truth, in an era where it sucks and the talent isn't really there and it's a lot of babes with boobs, I appreciate good women's wrestling and good in-ring skill. Nicole Matthews happens to have that. She plays a good heel character. So why not big her up on it? Hey, I tear her down when she has a bad match. I generally don't have very much bad to say about her. What do you want me to say?
You sound like the guy who looks at Playboys just for the pictures and says, you know, I like the articles. Yeah, I'm a big fan of women's wrestling.
Well, move on, because I know you want me to Tony Baroni taking on Rick. Rick the Jerk. Rick the man who won the PAC Cup. Stealing it away from Artemis Spencer, really. He was successful his last outing in Poco, taking on Billy Suede. This time, he takes on the champ, Tony Baroni. In the end, a very fine match with Rick establishing more of his heel character, Tony Baroni ends up getting the victory in the end cleanly over Rick, but the real talking point here is that I actually managed to catch up with Rick this time. We've been trying to get him on the show for a while now, and asked him a little bit about this match, his haircut. He's got an interesting haircut he's rocking out to now, so let's go to that audio right now and see what Rick had to say about this matchup and a variety of other subjects. Let's go back to the PAC Cup. Let's go way back. Had you been planning that attack on your former partner, El Fantasmo, the whole night? I mean, you can't deny it, Rick. We've seen the tattoos. We've seen the gear. We know it's you. Come out. Were you planning that the whole night? What's the scoop there?
No, Scoop, don't know what you're talking about. Still don't know who that man is. Couldn't tell you anything. It's a shame what happened, but hey, right man, right place.
Now that El Phantasmo is out injured and no doubt you had all to do with it, whether you want to admit it or not, Rick, how does that make you feel to know that your former tag partner, that you guys were pretty close together and even had fought in the previous Pat Cup to a good tilt, how does that make you feel to know that you were the guy that put him out of action?
Well, let's wind your question back to a little bit more realistic place where you say allegedly before you insult me with these accusations. Because it does hurt my feelings that you seem to believe that it was me. Look, in regards to your question, I couldn't care. You know, he's a good guy, whatever, does his thing. He's hurt now. Stiff pickies, you know? Not my problem.
No love from Rick here on the other end. I thought he'd give something to El Phantasmo. Now, I'm pretty involved in the Twitterverse, Rick, and I do keep an eye on your tweets, and you had been promising us a mullet for a little while, but you've gone for sort of an Australian Zach Morris look. Can you explain that?
Australians, you are an idiot. Like, an Australian Zach Morris, what planet do you live on? It's not an Australian Zach Morris. It's an under mullet, my friend. It's a combination undercut and mullet, okay?
Let's go back to Who's the Man, the last event at the RCC. You fell short of gaining the big belt from Tony Baroni, and you focused more of your time on taunting the fans, in particular some little kids, and you tweeted about it quite proudly. I was reading the tweets from Chicago. What do you have against the fans, and namely the little ones, the kids?
Well, let's break this one down, because there's a tremendous story here, Bori Casso. When I make an entrance to a wrestling event, and a fan, irregardless of age, tells me to do something that is frankly inappropriate for me to say on your television, oh, not even television, on your dodgy little radio podcast, all right? When the fan tells me to do this certain act, okay, the gloves are off, my friend. The gloves are off. Now, it doesn't matter if the fan is 8 or 88, okay? It's on. For young and old. Now, this fan and her friends said something that I feel was highly inappropriate, quite frankly offensive. My feelings were hurt. My soul was wounded. Okay? And, well, I hit back. I hit back pretty hard. And that kid, childhood ruined. And, yeah, I'm proud of it.
Now, Rick, you say, talk about some of these nasty things that the kids try and make you do. So, do you fancy yourself a man of integrity? Has this whole turn in your persona all come from realizing what Rick really wants?
It's not what I really want, and it's not really a turn. See, that's the thing. I've had so many messages from fans here in Vancouver and Surrey and Delta and whatever dump is here in BC, right? They're all like, oh, this is a turn and all that crap. It's not a turn. This is who I am. This is who I've been for years. All that other crap when I'd walk out and I'd pick up the fan and I'd high-five the little kids and I'd be like, woo, yeah, Surrey, woo. That's the crap. That's the lies, all right? That's the facade. What I'm doing right now, this is me to a T. This is me, baby. You can come home. You can come to my house. You can ask my wife. You can say to her, you can say, Penny, what is Rick like at home? And she'll say, he's a prick. He is a dead set prick. He hits me, all right? He kicks the dog in the face. This is the truth, baby. And this is where you got to go. This is where you got to realize, Corey Basso, all right? You got to wake up to yourself, buddy. Come on.
And that he is, Rick. Used to be Rick the Weapon X. Remember when he used to be a jolly guy?
I think he's still somewhat of a jolly guy.
But he's like jolly,
jolly
angry.
Prick, but he's still jolly.
Yeah, he's a jolly prick. That's what he is now. I don't mind the new character, though. And if you know what? If we don't get to see Baroni take on Powers or Bishop in an extended program, I wouldn't mind seeing Rick doing it. I know there's one wrestler who's probably got his eagle's eye on Rick. One El Phantasmo, who we did touch on, or who Rick did touch on in the audio I just played. He's out for a while, so we're going to have to wait for his return. And I've actually been talking to El Phantasmo off mic and trying to coax him into maybe
he's
doing...
there with you right now?
No, God, no. Maybe coaxing him into doing a few spots with us on Turnbuckle Time while he's injured, kind of like what we did with Sid Sylum, and see what his take on everything in the ECCW is, but he said he'll get back to me, so we'll have to wait for El Phantasmo on that one. But like I said, Rick, good match with Baroni, his character really coming along, and I wouldn't mind seeing Rick in a high-profile feud with just about anybody.
Well, I find it interesting to hear Rick saying that you know, he has always been this way, and he's always been a dick. And I don't know. I don't really feel that way. He always seemed like the big brother type that would look after you. He's always looking after El Fantasmo. And I remember one of the first ECCW events we went to, and we were interviewing some of the wrestlers. We had an interview with Rick the Weapon X, and you know what? Down-to-earth guy. He's very casual, very calm, relaxed. You know, me and him talked about our matching clotter rings, and I don't know. I think something has changed with Rick the Weapon X, and for some reason he doesn't see it. He wants to think he's always been this way, but I don't know. Something that I think has snapped with Rick the Weapon X. I don't believe he's the same Rick he was before.
Well, don't say that to Rick, because he'll come at you like he came at me. So we've recapped Poco. We've recapped Who's the Man. We're finally...
Wait, who won that match?
I said it a million times. It was Tony.
Oh, Tony. Oh, sorry. I was...
Who do you think? Is Rick the champion right now? Come on.
So Barone pins Rick to retain the championship.
You got it.
I got it. I'm up to speed now.
All right, Shane, now it's time for this part of the show. Sometimes it's the hardest part. Sometimes it's the easiest part. We talk about our tops, our flops, and we give the show a little rating out of 10 just to maybe give ECCW some stuff to think about as they move forward. What was your top for the Who is the Man card at the RCC?
My top is going to go to Alex Plexus finally getting a well-deserved victory in one-on-one action. I think back to before the Pac Cup, I believe it was Scotty Mack and Alex Plexus in a Pac Cup qualifier.
That's right.
And I thought Plexus had a great match. I thought it was a great coming out party for him. The fans were really, really behind him. And that was pretty impressive to see, seeing that Plexus was not on a lot of cards before that Pac Cup, so he still had that fan support. And I think he got the 3 count on that one, and somehow the match got restarted, or Scotty Mack weaseled his way to getting the match restarted, and Mack ended up getting the win in that one. And ever since then, I really wanted a big push for Plexus, just to see him get a little bit of respect and get a win finally in ECCW, so that'll be my top.
My top, Nicole Matthews promo. In a business where publicity is mostly bad for wrestling, it's good to see publicity when it comes from somebody taking the mic, and whether it's burning down another wrestler or doing whatever they have to do, she made headlines with that. A lot of people were talking about it. I heard about it all. Well, I was in Chicago when that show went on, and I was hearing it over the Twitterverse from more than just ECCW sources. I was hearing a lot about her promo. I got a chance to watch it. It was vicious. I would never have the cojones to go out and say stuff like that about my fellow wrestlers, whether it's shooting or as part of the work. So kudos to her for having the balls to take the mic, say some stuff, make some headlines. And you know what? The more wrestlers that can talk, the better off this place is going to be. I like to see good mic work. At the same time, I don't like to see bad mic work. But this was fantastic, and I can't say enough about Nicole's promo. And keep it up, all the heels. What was your flop for this show?
My flop is going to be Rieger von Slasher.
The German druid.
The German douchebag. Sure, let's give him the flop. Just because I used to care about the church. I like Danny Deeds. I like Cremator. The Mini Prophet, when they had the Prophet. You know, you love to hate them. You love to cheer them. At least you cared about what they were doing. Right now, Cremator and Danny Deeds, they're not feuding with anybody. They got this weird guy hanging out with them. They're not really doing anything. It's like these two weird guys at the high school dance that you never talk to. And then the next dance, there's another weird guy there, and you still don't talk to me. You still don't care about them.
And this guy has a mask on.
Look at that new freak with those guys. Oh, whatever. Like, there's no reason to care about them right now. So I'm going to give the flop to Rieger von Slasher, and just for not giving me a reason to give a shit about him.
Gotcha. My flop is Jason Sullivan. I mentioned it earlier. He's the utility man. It seems like whenever there needs to be an open slot in a match, I don't know if this is regards to lack of talent showing up at shows or what, but this guy seems to be just everywhere. He's feuding with the administration one week. He's feuding with the selection the next week. He's bailing Plexus out against the Lions the week after. There's no real sense of direction for him. I mean, he's a lovable guy. The fans love him. He's over with the fans, so do something with him. Don't just make him come out and be that generic babyface that just fills in babyface gaps. Come and give him a program. Let him fight a heel. Let him fight another big guy, you know what I mean? Let him take on the Cremator in a tilt. Maybe that'll give them something to do. But for me, Jason Sullivan, great wrestler, great guy. Fans are over for him. Use him properly. He's just kind of like I said, the utility man. Shane, what is your rating out of a possible 10 bloody chairs?
Before I give you my rating, I'm going to keep going here with the Jason Sullivan thing. There's no reason to care about him, no reason to care about Rieger Von Slasher. What about an angle that has Von Slasher maybe trying to, you know, brainwash or abduct Jason Sullivan, kind of turning him over to the dark side in the church, and every week have Sullivan, like, slink out of there or somebody save him, or the druid show his face to Sullivan, and Sullivan, you know, his eyes light up and bug out of his head like they always do, like he saw a ghost or, you know, his dad back from the dead or something, and give us a reason to care about these two characters and give us a reason to, you know, follow these two characters. So that's just something that I thought up of on the top of my head while you're talking there. And you wanted out of 10 for this show?
Yes, sir.
7 out of 10.
Me too. I gave it an easy 7. Good. Some good wrestling entertainment. Some slow points to the match. We had the good promo. We had some development between the Selection and Asylum. We had Barone go over Rick. I didn't have a problem with most of the card. Kind of lacked some crazy in the stars type stuff happening, but you can't expect that on every show. But that being said, I can't give out a 10 for every show. So I was on the fence, 7.57, but I've gone with a modest 7. So we're up to speed with Poco. We're up to speed with Who's the Man. The last two that we've missed. We're finally caught up. Coming up, Texas Bull Rope, the Bridgeview Hall, this Friday, July 29th. Doors at 7:30. Bell time at 8. Let's run the card, Shano, while it's fresh in our heads. The Texas Bull Rope. You touch four corners, you're the new champ. If you're Pete Powers, you retain if you're Tony Barone. Barone defeated Rick at the RCC. He's coming into this one strong. Pete Powers, we haven't seen since Abbotsford when him and Stallion Smith defeated Team Dangerfield, Ray Brooks and Jordy Taylor. This rivalry has been building for quite some time after Powers messed up Spinelli after they tagged an intergender tag match together. Not so successful. Powers takes it on Spinelli. Natural Selection digs their hooks in, recruits him, and now him and Barone having the Bull Rope match. And let's not forget, like we brought up earlier, Bishop may face the winner of that match as he is the number one contender. What are your thoughts on this match, Shane? What do you think is going to pan out? Give it to me.
Well, it seems like you know a little bit more about this match than I do. So the Texas Bull Rope match, I want to get these rules straight first. They are tied together with this Texas Bull Rope? Is that what I'm understanding?
I believe it is similar rules to that of a Caribbean strap match. They are locked at the wrist with I don't know how long it is.
A Caribbean strap match. Are you referring to the Salvio Vega?
Stone Cold from In Your House,
yes.
Beware of Dog.
In Your
yes,
House,
I am.
Like late 90s?
Yes, 96 of
Actually,
I
that
believe.
Match was nominated for a match of the year at the Slammy Awards that year.
Must have been a slow year.
Could this be an ECCW match of the year?
We'll find out, but the rules are pretty much that. You're locked at the wrist with the bull rope, and you have to walk around and touch all four corners to be victorious. We could be in for a long and maybe tedious match because, from my recollection, Caribbean strap matches and Texas bull rope matches aren't really that fun to watch.
I think it's up to the competitors to make them fun to watch. I think there's a lot of creative things you could do being tethered to each other. And I think Pete Powers being a big, powerful guy, this is a match where he's got to showcase that. He's got to think of creative ways to almost slingshot and whip around Barone because he's got to have, I don't know, 30, 40 pounds on Tony Barone. So I'd love to see Pete Powers showing his strength, you know, maybe hanging Barone by the bull rope over the top ropes or slingshotting him over, slingshotting him into the turnbuckle. I think there's a lot of cool spots that you could incorporate in a bull rope match. And I think it's just up to the competitors to be ready for this one and to put on a good show. But I'm actually really looking forward to seeing this one. I'm disappointed I won't be there. And that's one of the great things about ECCW. Every few events, they throw in one of these matches that you don't see all the time. Either it's a Three Stages of Hell, a TLC, a Chamber of Extreme. You know, every few cards is one of these matches to keep you interested.
But what about the Bishop factor? Do you think he's going to try and cash in on Powers if Powers wins here, or do you think it's going to be all buddy-buddy in the Selection?
I don't know. That's going to be interesting. We discussed this earlier, and as much as I want to see that Powers-Bishop feud, I think it's a matter of time, but it just seems it might be a tad bit early in Powers' push here as a heel to put the strap on him. So I'm going to have to say Baroni just squeaks out a victory here. I don't know how he does it. Maybe the natural selection comes in and they screw things up for Pete Powers. Because on paper, Baroni, he's smaller. It's just, I think he's going in as the underdog. But I think somehow, some way, Baroni's going to pull the victory out.
We'll have to see what happens. That's an interesting take there, though, Shane, with the whole Bishop factor. That kind of throws a different spin as to what the outcome of this this big match might be. And we were calling for a big feud for Baroni for a long time. So we're going to have to really see how Tony can handle the main event on a big card with a guy who is just coming into the main event scene himself. I mean, we know Baroni and Bishop can do it because they did it at TLC and at Season's Beatings. But we'll have to see if Baroni can pull it out with power. So,
and you would think Bishop might want to take a seat at ringside for this one. Usually you have the number one contender come down, and he likes to observe these championship matches to see who his opponent will be. And maybe Bishop will even, maybe he'll get involved in this one. Like I said, maybe costing Pete Powers the championship, maybe costing Tony Baroni the championship. So many factors, should be a good one.
NWA Canadian Junior Heavyweight Champion Artemis Spencer defends his belt against Nick Price. Artie, in his last outing, was unsuccessful at the RCC in the Fatal 4-Way Elimination to secure a spot at the aforementioned championship. Bishop got that role, as we just mentioned. Nick Price, he defeated Red Money in Poco. They're having a little bit of a tilt. Red Money taking the first one, Price taking the second in Poco. No doubt, I'm sure we can bank on a rubber match sometime soon between those two. But for right now, it's Price versus Artie. These two did meet at the Pat Cup. A lengthy absence for Price due to injury had kept him out for a while, but we talked to Price in the balcony of the RCC before he made his return. He said, "You know what? I've been looking forward to facing Artie for a long time. This is my match. This is where I make my coming out party," as we like to say, Shane. But in the end, a little bit of a sloppy match, not what Price, I think, wanted. Maybe a little bit of ring rust from him. We know Artie is generally pretty flawless in the ring, but the match didn't live up to expectation, I don't think, for either guys, and they have a chance to make it good now for the championship. What do you think is going to happen here between Artie and Nick Price?
I think Artemis Spencer is probably going to hold on to this. They really haven't built a program with Artemis and Nick Price. I'm happy to see Nick Price getting another shot at Artemis Spencer. Like you said, when we talked to him, he said he seemed like he was really looking forward to this match with Artemis Spencer, something he'd been looking forward to for a long time. I just hope to see a good match here. I hope this is a match that can kind of elevate Nick Price and make him relevant again in ECCW.
And I think that's really the key here, is to make Price relevant again, because he really hasn't been since E and I broke up, since his little quasi feud with Diaz and Awesome Sauce. He went on that lengthy injury, and I think maybe the fans forgot about him a bit. They need to reestablish Nick Price, because he can do it. This guy can draw heat. It's just a matter of getting him to put out the good in-ring product that we know Nick Price can do. So it's a work in progress, and. Am I too far out of line, and am I too demanding to think that maybe it's time Artemis Spencer got a legit somebody to feud with? You know, we saw him in the angle with the Prophet, the whole I repent thing, getting kicked out of the church. Didn't last too long. Do you think Artie deserves a good program for the junior strap?
Yeah, the junior heavyweight championship, I don't know. It always, to me, it seems like it's just been Azeem the Dream and Artemis Spencer. Those are the two guys that really stand out when you talk about junior heavyweights. Outside of those guys, it doesn't really seem like that belt belongs around the waist of anybody else, so it would be nice to see some fresh blood in the junior heavyweight division. Nick Price puts on a good match here. You know, he could be right up there. Red Money, he's maybe making a little bit of a push. So even Plexus, he had a win on the last event, so maybe some of these guys can maybe do something with Artemis Spencer. It seems like lately a lot of the focus has been on the big guys, your Bishops, Baronis, Pete Powers, so it'd be nice to see the little guys get more spotlight for a change.
Just running over the junior heavyweights, possible junior heavyweight contenders in my head, and the majority of them are face. So do you think it's maybe a matter of Artie going back to being an ass again for him to get that program? Because I'm sure they can find somebody who can hang with Artemis Spencer for a couple matches in a row. I'm sure they can. I mean, there's a lot of talented guys in that locker room. But do you think it's a matter of matching face versus heel? Because if you think about it, you got Plexus, you got Money. Nick Price is a heel. Rick was a heel. He was the former champion, but he's running a whole other program now, like you say, up with the big boys. So who could they possibly get to take on Artie and make it a believable feud?
And plus, you think about the champions. You have Tony Baroni, we have a babyface. We have Artemis Spencer, a babyface. We have Moondog Manson, the hardcore champion, babyface. So maybe we need another heel champion in there somewhere. But I don't know if it's Artemis turning heel. I don't like that move right now. I think he did the thing with the church. He was a heel then. They ran with that program for a while. I think they still have a few. I think they can still go with this for quite a while as Artemis, as the top guy, the baby face. And I think it's maybe just turning one of these other guys heel, maybe a Plexus or a Price. You know, this guy's coming off, you know, his Egos and Icons run. Diaz and Awesome Sauce get cheered by the fans. They're the favorite tag team. Baroni's champion. Nick Price can do this what about me thing. I was injured. Nobody cares. And just play on that. So I think it's Nick Price steps in there, or you got to turn one of these other guys' heels, because I don't want Spencer going to a heel quite yet.
Good take, Shane. Good take. We move on. ECCW Hardcore Championship. Moondog Manson taking on the big boy Bishop. Moondog regained the strap at Circle of Fear, which we always toss around the fact that that strap doesn't look like it fits anybody properly, like it fits Moondog. Bishop, he's the number one contender for the main strap, the big boy strap. And he's heavily involved in the Asylum and Selection angle, but finds himself plopped into a match with Moondog. Again, do you think they need to find some more guys who can stay hardcore for a long time to square off with Moondog? Because he's fighting a lot of mishmash of guys. And sure, Moondog's the hardcore teddy bear. They pay him to bleed. It is what it is. But what do you think about this matchup as far as if it makes sense?
I think it makes sense just because Bishop is one of those guys that can go in there. At TLC, we saw him take many nasty bumps, chair shots, ladder shots. So he can mix it up with Moondog Manson. A lot of other guys I don't think could put on a good hardcore match with Moondog. So Bishop gets put in there by default. I don't think he's going to win the title. And as far as a hardcore championship goes, I don't know. I was always a fan of those hardcore scrambles, those 24/7 rules. And I think it would bring, if they incorporated something similar to that in ECCW, it would just bring a little bit more excitement to the hardcore division. Right now, you don't really believe that anybody can upset Moondog Manson and take that belt from him. If there was some sort of stipulation they had in there that the belt could be changed at any time, then maybe you could think a smaller guy could upset him. But I don't know. Something needs to be done in that hardcore division.
Well, Bishop has been hardcore champ before. I think it was 2 years ago at Halloween Hell he captured the hardcore champion in a scramble-type format of a match. Another thing I want to touch on about this match is while Moondog had the comedy and the hilarity to wrestle with Ravenous Randy, they could play on that a little bit here. Neither of these guys are overly agile, so this could be a little bit of a slower encounter. So I think Moondog Manson, he needs to dip into the comedic side of his character to bring something else to this match. Because if this is a slow trudging along, I hit you in the head with a pylon, you hit me in the head with a pylon match, I think it might be kind of slow and kill some energy. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I think that Ravenous Randy feud, it was a one-off, you know. He's a comedic wrestler, but I don't know if comedy is really the I don't know if that belongs in the hardcore division. I know WWE tried it sometimes, and I don't know. It took away from, it's hardcore. Like, you can't mess around. This is no joke. Somebody could get hurt. And if you're joking around, it kind of, you know, it breaks that illusion that, you know, somebody could seriously get hurt if guys are making jokes and laughing and dancing in the ring. So I think they should, with these two big guys, they mean business. And that's what the Hardcore Championship is all about.
So you think they need to go ECW Hardcore and leave the Crash Holly Hardcore out of it?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Okay. Here's the match that I'm looking forward to the most on this card. And if you look on the ECCW website, it's rooted right at the bottom as, I think, the third last match. Whether they labeled it in order of importance or not, I think this better come after the intermission because shit's gonna hit the fan. The grit's gonna hit the pan as R-Truth said, Scotty Mack taking on Sid Sylum. Scotty Mack last in action in Poco, losing to the homeboy, Jamie Diaz, in front of the packed Poco crowd. And Sid Sylum defeating junior member of the Selection, Stallion Smith. Let's go back a summer ago. Scotty Mack was involved in the now infamous Sid Salem screwjob that completely turned this promotion on its head. Of course, we're talking about the Van City Street Brawl, where Sid Salem and Superfly Danny Myers were victorious over LP and Ravenous, only for a weird rematch clause to come up where Scotty Mack got to face Sid Salem in an impromptu NWA championship match. Salem obviously battered bloody, gets hit with a super kick. Scotty Mack gets the pin after 30 seconds, and he's the new champ. Of course, as that storyline evolved, we found out it was the creation of the administration, one of the top heel factions. Let's go back even further now. Former Chilltown partners. This is before our time. It was Sid, former tag partner of Scotty Mack. That faction included Dropkick Murphy, Nicole Matthews, Azeem the Dream, even at one point Ray Brooks in the floundering part of the Chilltown. It was Sid who ended Scotty Mack's record title reign and put him out for months before we saw him return. Are we going to see more history in this match? These two are history makers in the ECCW over the last 5 years or so. What do you think is in store for Scotty Mack and Sid Salem in Surrey?
Well, I'm hoping that we hear Scotty Mack and Sid Salem on the mic before this match kicks off. I would start the show off. It would be cool to see the show start off with either Scotty Mack, Sid Salem take the mic, you know, and just remind the fans how much history these two do have. Because I don't know if the fans have really been reminded in these last few events what happened between these two. And I would like to see that them just build on that, build on the history, you know, get the fans going, build that anticipation so when they come on later that night that the fans are ready to go, they're up to date, and hopefully on the side of Sid Salem looking for revenge on Scotty Mack.
I think that's a good show, Shane, because while me and you do know the history of this feud, and there is quite a considerable amount of history, I think it would just benefit the importance of the match and the crowd behind the match if they knew just how much these two hated each other and what has really gone on. I think it would make the match that much more important, give it that much more oomph, and you're totally right there, Shane. Another question I have, I want your take on. Do you think the administration and the selection will be involved in this in any shape or form? Do you see maybe Scotty Mack recruiting Sid Salem to go against the selection, something vice versa? Do you think maybe the administration and the selection join? What implications is this match going to have on both those groups?
Well, you said that Sid Salem and Scotty Mack, they hate each other, but I don't know if hate is the right word, because obviously, yes, Scotty Mack did screw Sid Salem out of his belt. But, you know, Scotty Mack, then he went on to feud with other people. Him and Salem never really had the feud. Scotty Mack was in that hardcore match at Halloween Hell, and Salem was in the war game. So they never really went at it. The hatred was never really there. Yes, he got screwed out of the belt, but that didn't become apparent until later on. So the possibility of Scotty Mack maybe recruiting Sid Salem to take on the natural selection, maybe not as crazy as I first thought.
We'll have to see what happens here. This is the one I'm looking forward to match. I think this one has the most open doors in the way the storyline could go. Let's move on now. Here's one match I'm not overly stoked on. Jason Sullivan taking on the Cremator. We talked about Jason Sullivan. He's the utility man. He fills in the gaps. He's the Connect Four, if you will. He's taking on Cremator, who was last in action, falling to Sid Salem in Abbotsford. He's working a program right now with Junior Daniels. We're still need to find out who the masked man is. Where do you see this one going? Obviously, no underlying storyline here. Kind of just a filler match. Two big guys going at it. Any thoughts?
No, I think that's basically what it is. It's a filler match. I don't really see them extending the Von Slasher, the Druid storyline anywhere here. So it's just a one-off, two big guys. That's what more can you really say?
I think we wrapped it up, Shane. Really good. And finally, another, probably the one I'm looking forward to the second most, the intergender tag match. We're talking Rick and Nicole Matthews. They're taking on Ray Brooks and Casey Spinelli. Nicole last defeated Taya Valkyrie at the RCC. Rick lost to Baroni, while Brooks was last, we last saw him when he was getting punked out by Nicole after Casey won the three-way. And Casey lost another three-way in Poco. That was her last action. We have the whole Ray and Nicole thing. We'll see where that development goes. Maybe some more 50-50 girl action. We have the KC-Nicole thing. And then we have Rick along for the ride. And I thought, I don't know if you watched the promo for this match on ECCW.com, but Rick and Nicole working wonderfully together as a heel tandem.
I did see the video. I heard Nicole Matthews saying her back was sore or boobs were sore or something from carrying the Supergirls division in ECCW. And you know what? They did have a good back and forth, you know, a good comedy pairing, if you would say that. And this match coming up, I think this is more to build heat between Nicole Matthews and Casey Spinelli. I think the Nicole Matthews-Ray Brooks thing, you know, Nicole might kick him in the nuts once and everybody will ooh and ah, and that'll be it. I don't really see them going anywhere with Ray Brooks and Nicole Matthews anymore. So basically I just see this one as them, you know, building a program between Nicole Matthews and Casey Spinelli and basically ending up in a Supergirls Championship match.
We have two sugary baby faces go against two asshole heels, and that's something I talked to Rick about. I asked him his thoughts about Nicole, about this match, and whether a possibility if these two could be a team in the future. So let's go to that audio right now and see what else Rick had to say on this match and some other stuff. You're up against Ray and KC this Friday with Nicole in your corner. Ooh. How is this match going to go, Rick? Break it down for us.
Oh, man, how is this going to go? Oh, my friend. All right. You remember, you know, there's been a lot of natural disasters over the last 10 years, and everyone's like, oh, it's global warming, blah, blah, blah. What's going to happen in that ring is global warming shrunk down to my fist punching Ray in the face, my friend. Ray, he's a nice guy. Everyone's like, ah, Ray Brooks, yeah, he's a lovely dude, all this rubbish. I don't care if he's a lovely dude. I'm going to kick him straight in the mangina, okay? I'm going to kick his mangina so hard that he will be able to feel it on the back of his head.
Another thing I want to touch on you with you, Rick, really quickly. You and Nicole looking very comfortable in your promo for the match on ECCW.com. You guys seem content to be assholes together. Is there a future partnership with you and Miss Matthews there?
Well, absolutely. Miss Matthews and I have been friends for a long time, going back to my very early days here in sunny Vancouver. Sunny. We're super comfortable together. We're very good friends inside the ring and outside the ring.
And just one final question before we wrap up. Also tying into the promo that I just mentioned on ECCW.com with you and Nicole Matthews bigging up this match, I noticed, I couldn't help but notice, you're wearing a Divine Prophet shirt. Is that a little bit of foreshadowing? I know you came out and you made your turn, even though you didn't call it a turn. You made that turn with the Prophet, even though you're not part of the church. Is there something you're not telling us there with that Divine Prophet shirt?
Well, you know, there's guys in the business that are your acquaintance, and there's guys in the business that are your friends, all right? And the Divine Prophet is a very, very good friend. And the T-shirt that you mentioned, it is a limited edition. So limited, in fact, there is only one. And you know, that was just the Prof looking after me like the good buddy he is. And you know what? You come up with your foreshadowing and your, oh, I read dirt sheets, blah, blah, blah. You know, buddy, you're not gonna read into everything. That's just me wearing my buddy's T-shirt.
So maybe a possible partnership for Rick and Nicole. I wouldn't mind seeing that. As much as I just said I'd like to see Rick in a big boy program with Tony Baroni or somebody else, I wouldn't mind seeing Rick work a heel program with Nicole Matthews either, because they both know how to talk on a mic. They can both wrestle. And I think I don't think that would be a bad idea. They should have done that to begin with. They should have just canned the Ray Brooks thing and just gone with Rick and Nicole.
And I think the program for Rick is going to be when El Fantasmo comes back. Those two are going to have it out for what happened at the Pac Cup. But until then, you know, Rick has to do something, and maybe he could do a program with Nicole Matthews, you know, to hold him over until El Fantasmo is back from injury.
That being said, though, like I touched on earlier, I am enjoying seeing Nicole Matthews back to her usual Nicole Matthews character and self. I don't think she really needs a partner. I don't really think she maybe not even want one, but if there was a guy who could work a good tandem with her and make it believable and get good heat, it's probably Rick.
But what's his deal with hating kids? Like, and I heard a few shows back, he told some little girl or some little boy that there was no Santa Claus.
That's what he's talking about.
Bunny or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That's what Rick
what
does.
What an asshole.
He thinks he's being real now. He doesn't. He's not sugarcoating it for all the lollygaggers anymore.
You know, hitting somebody with a chair, that's one thing. Calling somebody a slut, that's another thing. But, you know, tampering with the imagination of a young child, that's just at an all-time low.
It's Rick, man. It's Rick. We recapped Who's the Man. We recapped Return to Poco, and we just did a preview for the Texas Bull Rope this Friday, Surrey Bridgeview Hall. Doors at 7:30, bell time at 8:00. It's going to be a doozy, Shane. Let's get into our news and notes section, and a very important news and notes section. As sometimes I know you get a little I don't want to say homesick, but home wrestling sick as far as ECCW is concerned. But you managed to fill the gap on Sunday, I believe it was, and you went and you checked out some thrash wrestling at the Rutland Centennial Center in Kelowna. Some former guys that were on ECCW cards, now some guys that wrestle on ASW, All-Star Wrestling, which does a lot of their shows in North Van and Squamish and those areas. What did you think of thrash wrestling? Give us a general overview of their talent, the production of the show, the arena, the fans. What are your thoughts on thrash wrestling, this being your first show?
So it sounds like you want this skinny. I don't know if I would say I filled the wrestling gap with thrash wrestling. Their promotion out of Kelowna, they do all their shows in the Rutland Centennial Hall, which is funny because whenever Scotty Mack is wrestling, I'm always yelling at him, "Go back to Rutland, you loser." And guess who's back in Rutland on Sunday night? Me.
Loser?
I'm the loser. I feel like the asshole.
You're the guy sucking back iced tea and pachos watching thrash wrestling.
Yes, that's so. It's my old hood of Rutland. Thank God I got out of there. But I popped in for one night, and the website says $12 at the door. Seems reasonable. That seems reasonable,
mm-hmm,
doesn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely.
When I go there, yeah, $15. Well, I'm pretty sure I saw it said $12 on the Facebook. No, promoter said it was $15. So felt like I got fleeced a little bit there, but. But that's all right, $3, you know, I can handle that. So it seemed like a decent-sized crowd. It's not a Bridgeview Hall-sized crowd, but about 50, 60, from the looks of them, I would say loyal, hardcore wrestling fans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they started off the evening with a battle royal, and the winner of this battle royal would get a shot at the title, any one of the titles in thrash wrestling. So you got about 8-9 guys come out there. And right off the bat, one of the things I noticed, and I guess this is a testament to how good ECCW is one thing I noticed right away was them calling each other's moves.
Oh.
It was very obvious what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be tying up and like, wow, they've been really tied up for a while. And you could see them talking to each other and calling each other's moves. And I just tried to think back to ECCW and we've been to many, many events, and I don't think I've ever pointed out to you once, hey, did you see that?
Never.
And that's something you kind of take for granted, and you kind of don't really realize until you see it being done very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things I noticed in the Battle Royal. And in a Battle Royal, there should be enough guys in there where, you know, you shouldn't be so obvious.
Or you shouldn't be able to hear the guy anyways.
But anyways, the guy named Slave, who I thought looked like the weakest in the Battle Royal, somehow ends up winning this thing. All right, so Slave wins. Blah, blah, blah. Come on, Michael Moore, who's the champion there. Michael Moore, top drawer, cut promo.
The documentary guy?
Not the documentary guy. He's got about the same build as Michael Moore, the documentary guy. He definitely has a beer belly. And he comes out, and I guess he's a good heel villain. Everybody hates him. Everybody's saying he has a small penis. He comes out, cuts a promo. This Adam Ryder guy comes out, tells him he sucks, he's a chump. And then they have a little match, non-title match. And I believe, I think that fat Michael Moore guy ended up winning that one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But one of these things I always wonder is, if I was a wrestler and I was appearing half naked in front of like 50 to 100 people every month, you know, I would get in some sort of shape.
Well, you know what? That's probably another testament to the guys at ECCW. I don't know if you follow Scotty Mack on Twitter, but he's big on pushing that wrestlers should be at the gym, and you should be starting that early, and you should be in shape. You shouldn't be having your gut hang over your waistband of your trunks when you're in a title match. You need to look good. And you know what? For the most part, unless they're guys who are supposed to be bigger guys like Moondog or Lumberjack Bubba, most of the ECCW guys are in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and as a fan, if you're sitting in the front row, you got to believe that if you were in the ring with one of these guys, that they would tear you apart. And with a top drawer, Michael Moore, you know, I'm not in the best shape. I have a little bit of a beer belly, but you know what? I think I could take this Michael Moore guy. I'm not too intimidated by him.
Go on. Keep on talking about the card chain. I'll give you my thoughts after. Talk more about the main event and the crowd and stuff like that.
Well, okay. Well, that Slave character, when the Battle Royal came out, he fought this minion guy. more of the same. You could see a lot of move calling going on. There was one interesting spot where the slave guy did a splash onto a stop sign on the minion guy. Anyways, the minion guy gets the win. He's the new Okanagan champion, I guess. That's what that one was all
about. Prestigious title, the Okanagan Championship.
Prestigious title, yeah. I just brush over it like it doesn't exist. there was one guy, Casey Andrews, from somewhere out in Ontario, I think London, Ontario. He fought the Black Dragon. And Casey Andrews, probably one of the more fit guys in thrash wrestling, cut a good promo. He's kind of a smarmy, kind of Randy Orton type heel, kind of a douchebag. And actually pretty impressed with that match, some good spots. You didn't see the move calling as prominently as you did in the matches before that. We saw a promo by Marty Sugar.
Ooh, I'm going to touch on him in a sec.
Yes, I guess he's one of the more prominent guys in the thrash wrestling. He wasn't there that night. Mm-hmm. He cut a promo. I guess he walked away from a match a few weeks ago, and the wrestling fans are wondering why he did it. So not really sure what was going on there, but seemed like a decent promo and seemed like one of the Kelowna favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Mr. Beefy Goodness.
Oh, Vance Nevada. I saw him at an All-Star show. That's right.
Yes, Vance Nevada was taking on Kyle Sebastian, who had just won the Trans-Canada Championship at an All-Star Wrestling event, I think in Maple Ridge a few nights before.
Oh.
And this was for that Trans-Canada title match. And Kyle Sebastian, this kid actually has a lot of promise. You didn't see those moves being called like you did in the other matches. One of the most athletic guys, okay, the most athletic guy on the card. He looked like he was in shape. Mr. Beefy Goodness, on the other hand,
not so much.
Not very athletic, not in shape, very hairy, and just hard. He's hard to look at, just a weird person. Big fat gut, and he has one of these Audi belly buttons. You see like one in a thousand people have one of these weird looking things.
Uh-huh.
And it's disgusting, yet you can't look away at it. I don't know how to describe it. I guess it kind of looks like a. I don't know if you have a delay or a beep, but
we don't have a delay. This is a podcast.
Oh, whatever. You can edit it out. It looks like a prolapsed asshole the way it sticks out. And it's kind of like anal porn. Like, you don't want to watch it at the same time. You just can't. You don't look away.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So, Mr. Beefy Goodness, kind of cringeworthy when you're watching this guy in the ring. But Kyle Sebastian, he gets the win in this one, and there was actually a stipulation that if Kyle Sebastian won, Mr. Beefy Goodness would have to wear a Kyle Sebastian T-shirt.
Oh, wow.
For the next 6 weeks or something like that. How they ended the match was kind of clever. They had Kyle Sebastian put a sleeper hold on Beefy Goodness. Beefy Goodness, his hand gets dropped 3 times. He's out cold, so then they're able to put the T-shirt on. So when he comes back to, he realizes he has a T-shirt on, and he fumbles to the back with the T-shirt over his head, you know, mm-hmm. playing the buffoon character.
That's okay.
So that was basically thrash wrestling in a nutshell. Impressed with Kyle Sebastian. I think he has got a lot of talent, maybe even enough talent to break into ECCW. The other guys on the card, I skipped over a lot of it. There's a few matches I probably even missed. And just the quality of wrestling and just the whole production, just not where not anywhere close to what ECCW is putting on right now. There's a few guys on the card that stand out, but overall, I would say a 4 out of 10.
Okay. Well, we have to make it perfectly clear that we're in no stretch of the imagination comparing ECCW and thrash wrestling to each other.
We're not?
No, you may have been, but I'm using kind of ECCW as a benchmark, if that makes sense. Because it's mostly what I watch, so I'm compelled to put other promotions up against it, if that makes sense. But in no way are we, no way are they competitors, or are we squashing or burying thrash wrestling. We're just merely comparing it because that's really what we have to compare it to. Yeah.
Yeah, like I haven't seen many other independent wrestling promotions, so automatically the first thing I will mm-hmm. compare it to
yeah.
is ECCW.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean.
The crowd was there; they were into it. They seemed to follow the storylines. They knew what was going on with the characters. So everybody who was there, I want to say, they did seem like they had a good time. And, I have a lot of things I could say. There was a cool thing. They have these cups at the merch booth, and on the cups is pictures of all the wrestlers. And so they asked the fans, if you enjoy this wrestler, his gimmick or his match or whatever, that you drop a loony or a toonie into his cup. And if you didn't enjoy him for any reason, that you drop a penny or a dime or a nickel into the cup. And the lower the denomination of the coin, the more you dislike that guy. So, and then all the money went to help fix the roof of the venue. I guess it's fallen apart. So I thought that was kind of cool. You could go to the merch booth after the event, kind of look and see who everybody liked, who everybody didn't like. I think that was a great idea, something maybe they could incorporate into to ECCW.
Yeah, no, I think that would be good in some shape or form. That way, it is a way of getting feedback, but anonymous feedback, and it's still for a good cause. Like, you can put it towards helping out the center that you're working in or whatever like that. I think that's very interesting. So for instance, if you went up and you saw Slave's jar and it was full of, like, 10 toonies, but you went over and you saw Marty Sugar's jar and it was full of, like, 30 pennies, who's worse?
Marty Sugar's worse for sure.
Even though he has more actual pennies, just because they're of the lower denomination, he's not worth as much?
Yeah, basically, if you put a penny in, that's a thumbs down. If you put two pennies in, that's two thumbs down. If you put 10, that's 10 thumbs down.
Gotcha. So that's a good take on that, though, Shane. Do you think you'll be back to check out some thrash wrestling?
I don't think I'll be back anytime soon. That Marty Sugar, the promo he cut, kind of got me interested. Seemed like he could maybe be the Scotty Mac of that promotion, where mm-hmm. you know, he's the guy in charge, he's number one, and he kind of makes that thing run. One thing I do want to say, though, Steve, the guy who was doing the emceeing, did a great job. He was doing the ring announcing. He was doing the music. He was doing 50-50. And he was even doing announcing, or he was calling the matches over the PA system as they were happening. So he was basically doing commentary of the matches.
That's cool.
Over the venue's PA system. I thought it was – I wasn't sure what to think about that, because you're in a smaller venue. It's more intimate. You can almost let the wrestlers tell their story a little bit more when the fans are right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telling the stories by the looks on their faces, how they're interacting with the other wrestlers and mm-hmm. the fans. And I think that's something you can do in a smaller, intimate venue like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having the guy announcing over top of that takes away from that intimacy a little bit.
Gotcha. Well, that's a good take. Yeah, you're right, though, because it can be a little bit distracting, right?
It can be a little distracting. He did do a good job, and I liked it because he would fill you in, like, oh, these two guys got a lot of history. This happened in the previous match or the previous event, so I didn't feel completely left in the dark. But I don't think it's something I would want to see at every event, and especially not in ECCW.
Gotcha. Well, good take. Thanks for checking that out for us, Shane, and giving us a little report on that. It helps if we're ever in the area and want to check out a show. We know what we have coming to us, and we don't maybe hold them to the high ECCW standard that we're used to. Maybe we need to be a little bit more open-minded and realize that not everybody is the top promotion in Canada. So,
yeah, I think we got to realize that ECCW, they seem like a well-oiled machine. As far as a business sense go, they seem to have a great understanding of that. I've never gone to a show and been charged more than it said on the card, or there was never any confusion whatsoever with that.
Mm-hmm.
The bookings have all been solid, and the wrestling's been solid. So ECCW, they've been doing it for a while. I think Thrash, they're an upstart indie promotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a lot of potential there, and maybe if we get some ECCW guys up there to help them out, and maybe we can build something nice in the Okanagan.
I know Scotty and Tennille did a few shots with them up there, so we'll see how that all goes, and if any other wrestlers from the Pacific Northwest or even in the Alberta or Winnipeg regions flock to that.
If you are in the Okanagan, they are doing an Okanagan Cup, I guess their version of the Pac Cup, August 19th, and that's at Rutland Centennial Hall. So you can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, get all the information. And if you are a wrestling fan, go check it out. Support local indie wrestling.
Yeah, no, for sure. And coincidentally, I don't know if they scheduled it like this, but I think there's WWE in Kamloops on the 21st, so having it on the 19th might be a little bit of a pump up to those going to the WWE in the Okanagan. But anyways, moving on, my news and note. The Agra Fair will be hosting some ECCW shows this week from Thursday all the way until Monday of next week. If I'm not mistaken, they have 2 1-hour shows per day. They are free to whoever's at the Agra Fair. I know you're going to see guys like Bishop, Diaz, Sid Sylum, Jr., Cremator, Kalos, or Hellion or one of his personas. You're going to see those guys as well as a lot. I understand they're actually going to let a few of their younger wrestlers that are coming out of the Slam Academy and training with a lot of the wrestlers. They're going to be getting some of their debuts. So if you see a guy there wrestling that may have looked like a ref or a sound guy or a commentator, it probably was him. And because most of those guys are training to be wrestlers. And you're going to see a few of their debuts. And I'm actually going to be there Thursday, Sunday, and a little bit of Monday. I'm going to try and mic up some of those upstart wrestlers that are going to be getting their first start in front of the audiences at the Agra Fair. And I think it's great for ECCW to get the name out there. They do shows in Abbotsford, so advertising for the next show. Get some of their less experienced wrestlers some more time in the ring that isn't maybe in such a pressured environment in the big card of a TLC or a Halloween Hell. Get them a little bit of a less pressure-filled environment for some experience. And overall, I'm stoked on it, and I think it's going to be a fun time those couple days down at the Agra Fair, Shane. And I'm choked you can't be with me to see it, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, plus all that candy corn and candy apples, mm-hmm. mini donuts and corn dogs, popcorn and cotton candy, and all that other good stuff that I'm going to be missing out at the old fair.
Well, Shane, we've done our news and notes. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think I pretty much got in everything. I've said everything that's to be said. Follow me, Shane Loughran, at the Sharkcast on Twitter.
You can follow me at CD Basso. That's not CD as in low, the low underbelly of society. That's CD as in compact disc or Corey Daniel. Basso, that's CD BASSO. You can follow at Turnbuckle Time. Of course, you can follow at ECCW, their Facebook fan page. The wrestlers have Facebook fan pages. And most of them have the Twitter as well. And like I mentioned earlier, I'll drop you the Bollywood handle. It's Bollywood_Lions if you want to give those jerks some hell on Twitter. It's Bollywood. At Bollywood_Lions. We had a lot of talk about him. He's coming up. He's challenging for the belt. We get to see him in his first shot at the big boys title in the main event slot. Pete Powers. You know more about his song than I do, so tell me what it is, and I'll get it rustled up, and we'll play it.
I know it's an Audioslave song. I forget the title of it, which is strange because I knew on like 4 or 5 turnbuckles or times ago.
Isn't it The Worm or something?
The Worm or The Maggot. Something like that. Just play it. Audioslave, Pete Powers.
There it is. Big ups to Pete Powers. He'll be taking on Tony Baroni this Friday in the Texas Bull Rope match. Shane, thanks so much for joining me. We'll get together to do the recap and preview for some August action. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
It's Shane Walker and it's Corey Bassel. We're signing off. It's Turnbuckle Time.